is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. 13,000 auto workers in facilities at three different plants are now on strike. A GM factory in Missouri, a Ford plant in Wayne, Michigan near Detroit, and a Jeep plant run by Stellantis in Ohio. Here with me to break it all down is Mike Martinez, reporter for Automotive News. Mike, welcome to Mishmash.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the demands. Why are the workers on strike and what do they want?
The workers want a lot. And you essentially have to go back to the Great Recession when the UAW gave up a lot of concessions on wages and benefits to keep the Detroit Three alive, financially stable. Now the times are good and the companies are quite profitable. The union wants significant wage gains that match and exceed the inflation rates that we've seen the past few years. They want things like cost of living adjustments back, which is something they gave up in the recession. They want pensions for all workers, another thing they gave up. So essentially, they want to wind that clock back and get everything that they used to have, if not more.
And why is it that these three plants and these employees specifically are on strike? Because it's not everybody in the UAW that's on strike. Walk us through sort of like how it was chosen, who is going to be striking.
It's a really interesting strategy. It's something we haven't seen before in contract talks between the union and the Detroit Three automakers. The union essentially wanted to create as much confusion as possible. They didn't want the companies to know exactly what they were doing, and they wanted the ability to accelerate, expand this strike if necessary. So they started with three assembly plants that make relatively profitable and relatively popular models, but they're not the most profitable. They're not the most popular. So if the union needs to, they can ratchet up that pressure and take a few other plants offline as well. That could happen as early as this Friday.
You mentioned that this is a strategy that hasn't really been seen before. Do you know how they came up with this or like where is this based off of anything? Where is this coming from?
Well, the union has called targeted strikes in the past, but typically it's limited to one automaker. They're known as bottleneck strikes, and that's typically when you take down a engine or a transmission plant that feeds other assembly plants. The idea there is to have as much impact with as little footprint as possible, because one engine plant could supply five assembly plants, for example. That's an idea of kind of what the union's doing, except they're not exactly looking for that maximum impact right away. Part of this is to help preserve their strike fund, which is at around $825 million. So if you have every plant go down at once, or many plants go down at once, you have to start paying those workers out of that strike fund after day eight. And that could get a little dicey, and that could allow the union to lose a bit of its leverage if it runs out of money. So this maintains that strike fund. It still has an impact, and it causes a little confusion for the companies.
I want to go back to some of those demands. In a recent article, you interviewed Stephen Ratner, who negotiated concessions with the UAW to help keep GM and Chrysler afloat in 2009. You quoted him in that article as saying, "The union has to be careful that they don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg, so to speak, by asking for too much." What elements of what the UAW is asking for does he think is, quote, too much?
Well, I think to start off with maybe that 40% wage gain demand, we've seen the union come down a little bit to about 36%. The automakers are still far apart. That's a lot of money. I think Stephen and even the companies will admit their workers deserve big pay raises, maybe not quite that much, at least in his view. But especially his thoughts go to those other things I mentioned before, things like pensions, even cost of living adjustments. And there's a element in the union's demands that would essentially bring back the jobs bank, which was something in that Great Recession era that was done away with. It would essentially continue to pay workers even if their plant was closed and they were laid off. So you had thousands of workers sitting around doing nothing, getting paid almost their full wages. And Ratner says that would not be financially viable for these companies just because they can't add those type of structural costs back onto their books. Their profits would diminish, if not disappear altogether, and they wouldn't be able to be competitive with everyone else in the industry.
Ratner also mentioned that the union workers do deserve these raises, as you said, but there's this sort of problem with a balance because the automakers need to stay competitive, you know, and we're thinking particularly in this market where you've got quite a number of out of country auto manufacturers. You've also got Teslas, you've got your Toyotas and all these other companies. So is there a way for the UAW to get what they want while the big three stays competitive?
Well, that's where the big question is, and that's what the two will have to come to an agreement on at some point. And there's going to have to be compromises on both sides. I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect significant raises for their members, for those workers to be taken care of for everything they've done. But it's also reasonable to realize that the companies need to remain strong and competitive. You have the Teslas, the Volkswagens, the Toyotas of the world that don't employ union labor. They just don't have the same amount of costs they need to pay out to those workers that the Detroit 3 do. When you get into things like electric vehicles, and when you get into even some gasoline powered vehicles, it's heavy competition. The companies need to invest to remain competitive. And it would be bad if they were starting behind the eight ball, so to speak, with significantly higher labor costs compared to the others.
You mentioned briefly that part of this strike goes back to the Great Recession. Can you walk us through the history here and sort of how we got to this point in more detail?
Sure. So around 2007, when the economy was not doing well at all, and the Detroit 3 at the time also were not doing well at all, they made a deal with the union. It was a contract year, just like it is this year. But that deal was very concessionary because the leaders at the time realized we need a little bit of help here if we're going to remain around as a company, because we're not making money right now and then it's not looking good for the foreseeable future. So the union agreed to things like the tiered wage system, which paid new hires significantly less, $14 per hour compared to $28 per hour. They agreed to things like ending the jobs bank, concessions on healthcare, essentially so they could throw the companies a lifeline and they could remain in business. In 2009, a few years later, as the economy continued to go down the toilet, they made even more concessions. Now, they essentially want everything back. And you have a new era of leaders here within the union that don't come from the caucus that has been in power for decades. Those leaders argue that the past presidents who negotiated deals in 2019 and 2015 and 2011 didn't do enough to win back those concessions they lost in that 07-09 timeframe. So you have new leadership that's really fired up, really hoping to give members what they feel they deserve.
We are recording this on Thursday, and things could potentially change as soon as Friday when this airs. But as of right now, the strike has been going on for about a week, and this is about 13,000 of the roughly 146,000 workers at these three plants. So far, how big of an impact is this having on the auto industry?
It's growing by day. We've seen a number of smaller suppliers, a few folks that have operations within those assembly plant complexes that are on strike, have to lay off a few hundred workers here or there. We've seen a fourth assembly plant, GM's Fairfax assembly plant, be laid off. It's not too far from Wentzville, and they get parts from Wentzville, so they can't operate right now. We'll continue to see those type of ripple effects, even if it's only these three plants. But if the union adds to that, it's just going to sort of snowball, and that impact will grow and grow.
President Joe Biden has weighed in on all of this. What is he saying, and does he have any plans for getting involved?
So the president has touted himself as the most pro-union president in history. So you can expect that he is showing support for the union. He's echoed a lot of UAW President Sean Fain's talking points and said he agrees that record profits from the companies should mean record contracts for the workers. He's attempted to send a couple aides here to Detroit. The UAW president didn't really seem too happy with it. I think really on both sides of the bargaining table, they want to do this themselves and they don't want any help or any interference, so to speak. So President Biden said, after all, that those two aides would remain in Washington and stay in contact with the UAW and the automakers. Essentially, he wants the strike to end as soon as possible. And quite frankly, I think everybody does, right? Even the workers. Nobody wants a strike. It's economically devastating for everyone involved. But it's the biggest weapon, the biggest tool the union has to have leverage and to get what it wants.
Any chance in your mind that the big three start employing non-union labor?
Well, not necessarily, not at least in the assembly plants. The big question mark here is what happens with electric vehicle battery plants moving forward. We've seen a lot of the companies set up joint ventures, and that in a way gets around the UAW's master agreement that covers all of the assembly plant workers, because they're different legal entities that operate these battery plants. It's not a Ford Motor Company plant. It's a Ford plus a battery provider plant. So those aren't necessarily unionized. There's going to be drives to unionize them in the near future. The union hopes they can do that. They hope those wages will be in line with what they make in the assembly plants, but that's not a certainty.
Mike, you've been covering the negotiations for quite a while. How do you see this strike ending? And do you have any sort of predicted timeline in your head?
I hope it ends quickly. I'm not sure that's going to happen, just because the two sides really seem to be far apart on a lot of key issues. They honestly can't even agree on basic definitions of some of their top priorities. I think that at a certain point, the union's going to have to compromise. That's the nature of negotiations in any business. Nobody ever really gets everything that they want. You're going to have to find common ground somewhere. We've seen the automakers, they've made their offers public so far, and we've seen how they have sort of increased, at least on the wage raise offer part of things. They may have to come up even more. They may have to put money in different pools. At the end of the day, there's only so much money to go around, and it's about sort of how you bucket that in this contract if you're able to meet what the union wants and its priorities. So I think, I don't know if it's necessarily meeting in the middle, just because the union's asks have been very high and the automakers have already come up, but we're going to have to meet somewhere north of 20% and south of 40% on those wage gains, and at least address a few of the union's other top priorities.
Mike Martinez is a reporter for Automotive News. Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on Mishmash.
Thanks for having me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional help from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you really, really like this show, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your support, really, shows like this one and all of the great work that WDET does just would not be possible. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.